Welcome to episode 1456 of the 1010 Thrive podcast, brought to you by 1010 Thrive Ministries. 1010 Thrive, 10 minutes a day, based on 10 guidelines for abundant living. Today, we resume our series on the life and times of the apostles. Our focus this week is on James, the brother of Jesus. There is something deeply moving about hearing the story of Jesus through the eyes of someone who knew him, not first as a teacher, miracle worker, or Messiah, but as an older brother. James grew up under the same roof as Jesus. He shared meals with him, worked beside him in Joseph's workshop, argued with him, watched him, and, at least for a time, failed to understand him. His memories remind us that the greatest miracle in Nazareth may not have been anything Jesus did, but who he was. Quiet holiness has a way of revealing itself not through spectacle, but through thousands of ordinary moments lived with extraordinary faithfulness. As James looks back across the years, we are invited to see the hidden life of Christ through the eyes of the brother who would one day call him not simply my brother, but my Lord. Acts of the Apostles, Part 2, Chapter 1.
People ask me what it was like to grow up with him. They expect something miraculous, some sign that should have told us from the beginning, an aura, a voice from heaven, a childhood full of the small wonders that stories about holy men always seem to contain. I have to disappoint them. He was my brother, older than me by a few years. He worked in the same workshop, ate at the same table, slept in the same house. He laughed at things that were funny. He got tired at the end of a long day. There was nothing about him that would have made a stranger stop in the street. And yet, there was something. I knew it even then, though I could not have named it. Something that set him apart from every other person I have ever known. Not above us, exactly. Deeper. As if the rest of us were wading and he was always somehow standing on the bottom. After Jesus came me, then Joses, then Judas, then Simon, and sisters too. The house was never quiet. Our father Joseph kept the workshop busy from first light to the hour before Sabbath. Jesus and I worked alongside him from the time we were old enough to hold a tool. Carpentry in Nazareth meant more than furniture. Yokes and plows, roof beams and door frames, the unglamorous infrastructure of ordinary life. Our hands learned wood the way other men's hands learned soil or fish. I was good at the work, fast and accurate. By the time I was 12, I could do most of what the workshop required without direction. I was proud of this. The pride of a younger brother who has found something to be good at. The trouble was that Jesus was better, not faster, not louder about it. Better in a way that is harder to argue with. A quietness in the work, a patience with difficult grain, a finished surface that made you run your hand across it and wonder what you had done differently. He never pointed this out. He never needed to. The work said it. That was the first thing I understood about my brother. His excellence did not announce itself. It simply was. And there is nothing more difficult to live alongside than a virtue that does not try to be noticed. He was cheerful, not performing it, not working to be liked. Genuinely glad in a way that had nothing to do with whether things were going well. On days when the work was hard and the customers were difficult and the younger ones were underfoot, Jesus would be exactly as he always was. Steady, present. Not pretending the difficulty away, just not governed by it. He was truthful in a way that was occasionally inconvenient, not harsh. He never used truth as a weapon. But he would not say a thing was other than it was, even when a small, comfortable untruth would have been easier. When the small, merciful lies of childhood, I did not do it, I do not know, came so naturally to the rest of us, he simply did not have them. And he was patient with us, his brothers and sisters. Patient in ways I can only describe now, looking back, as extraordinary. Because we were not always kind to him. That is the part I find hardest to say. But it is true, and the truth matters here more than my comfort. His consistency made our inconsistency visible, and we did not like what it showed us. We criticized him, found fault, told ourselves there was something odd about a boy who never lost his temper, who never said the unkind thing that would have made the rest of us feel better in the moment. He never retaliated, not once. He would look at us, not wounded, not superior, just steady, and wait for the moment to pass. And the moment always passed, and he was always still there, exactly as before. There is nothing more uncomfortable than someone who refuses to become what you accuse them of. I was perhaps 7 or 8. Jesus would have been 12. We made the pilgrimage every year. The long walk south through the hill country, our family joining the great stream moving toward the city. For children, it was the great adventure of the year. The festival came and went. We worshipped, ate the Passover meal, did what a faithful Jewish family does. Then we turned north for home with the other pilgrims. It was a full day before our parents realized Jesus was not with us. The caravan halting, Mary's voice sharp with fear.
James, where is your brother?
Emma, what?
James, where is Jesus?
Oh, Jesus, I don't know.
James, think, please. When did you last see him?
Yesterday, I think. I thought he was with the Bethsaida cousins.
He is not with the Bethsaida cousins. Joseph, we have a problem.
We turned back. One day's travel north, then one day south again, then another day searching the city before our parents thought to look in the temple. I remember following them into the courts. The teaching going on. The back and forth of questions. The quality of attention in the crowd gathered around one group. And in the middle of it, sitting among the teachers, perfectly composed, was my brother, Jesus. Apparently unconcerned that his entire family had been searching for him for 3 days.
Child, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been searching for you in great distress.
He looked at her without guilt, without defensiveness. A kind of gentle puzzlement, as if the answer were obvious.
Mother, why were you searching for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?
None of us understood what he meant. I was 8 years old and furious with him for frightening our mother, and I wanted to go home. But I have thought about those words ever since. He said it as a question, as if there had never been any doubt in his mind where he would be found. As if the temple was simply home. More home than Nazareth? More home than the workshop or the table or any of the ordinary places that made up our ordinary life? That was the first time I understood there was something in my brother I could not reach. That the house we shared, warm, full of wood shavings and bread and noise, was not for him the whole of it. That he lived in some larger space I had no door into. We went home to Nazareth. He came with us. He was obedient to our parents and everything returned to ordinary. But the question stayed with me. Did you not know?
It is easy to imagine that if we had lived in Nazareth, we surely would have recognized Jesus for who he was. James's story gently corrects that assumption. No one was closer to Jesus than the members of his own household, yet even they struggled to understand him. Familiarity can dull our vision. We can become so accustomed to Christ that we stop marveling at him. And yet the same Jesus who patiently endured the misunderstandings of his own family still waits patiently for us today. He does not force belief. He invites it. The question that lingered in James's heart after the temple, "Did you not know?" eventually found its answer in the resurrection. May we never lose our wonder at the one who quietly walked among ordinary people while revealing the very character of God. Like James, may we come to know him not merely as someone close to us, but as the Savior who alone is worthy of our worship. To be continued.